Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this meeting of the Inner West Local Planning Panel on Tuesday, the 17th of December, 2024. My name is John Brunton, and I've been appointed chair for today's meeting. This is a formal meeting, and on behalf of the council, I acknowledge the traditional people of this place, the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation. For countless generations, they were part of the country on which we meet today. I also acknowledge those from other First Nations who are now people of this place. We acknowledge and pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and those who work for truth, justice, and reconciliation. As we begin, I wish to ask the members of today's panel to introduce themselves. As I said earlier, my name is John Brunton, and I'm a registered planner and a fellow of the Planning Institute of Australia. The Minister for Planning has appointed me as one of the chairs of this panel. The other panel members will introduce themselves, beginning with Sue Weatherly.
Hello, I'm Sue Weatherly. I'm a planner with some experience in local government over a very long period of time. I was appointed to the planning panel by Inner West Council.
Is Brian Kirk?
Hello, my name is Brian Kirk. Qualifications in town planning and land economics. Worked in state government, local government, and private practice for a number of decades now, and am appointed by Inner West Council as an expert member of this planning panel.
And Alan Barnes.
Yeah, my name's Alan Barnes. I'm a local resident, and I'm here as community representative. Also have the role of looking after the interests, if you like, of the Aboriginal community.
Thank you, Alan. The first matter on the agenda is the declarations of interest. We only have one item on the agenda. Each panel member has signed a declaration stating that they are not aware of any conflicts of interest and they are publicly available. Panel members have made themselves familiar with all the material relevant to the planning proposal. This includes inspecting the subject site, reading the assessment report and the checklist, and any other material submitted with the application. And earlier today, we had a detailed briefing with council officers. So before I invite the representatives of the proponents to address the panel, I need to deal with some housekeeping matters. Now, this is a public meeting, and everything that is said is being recorded. So I would suggest you exercise care. Please keep your microphones on mute unless you've been requested to make your presentation or to answer a question. Once you have finished speaking, please set your microphone on mute again. I've been informed that we have several people registered to speak today. Daniel Blakely, Tim Layton, and Nick Krang. Those people are representing the proponents, and I invite you to use the time as you choose. Initially, I'm going to provide a period of 10 minutes for you to make a presentation, but I'm sure that the panel members will then want to ask a series of questions and request further explanation. So I can imagine that this will go on for a few minutes as we explore all of the issues around the planning proposal. After the panel has heard your presentation and your explanations, we will go into a closed session. And the panel will then consider all the information submitted and compile a report, which will be forwarded to council for it to consider when it decides how it wishes to proceed with the planning proposal. The decision of the panel in this case is only advisory. The panel's decision on the planning proposal will be published on the council's website by the end of this week, ahead of any report to the council. So with that, well, I'd like to move into presentation, and I understand Danielle might be going to lead us off. Is that correct?
Yes, hi John, thank you very much. I can take it from here. So yes, I'm Danielle Blakely. I am a planner at Urbis, an associate director, and I've been working with the National Storage team on this planning proposal for about 2 years. They've purchased the site, which currently is a self-storage facility, and their intention is to expand that self-storage facility to support the growing demand for services of that nature in the Inner West area. We lodged the application in September 2023, but there was a pre-consultation process of about a year prior to that. Over the time since we submitted the application, council staff alongside the National Storage team, including architects and engineers, planners, have worked with council to come to a resolution that we are all supportive of. The proposal is for site-specific and use-specific intensification of FSR on the site. And coupled with that is the request for a height control, which is currently not required on the site. So currently there's no height control. There is an OLS, and we've worked with council to come up with something that we believe is satisfactory and appropriate in the context of surrounding developments that are advancing, particularly the Marrickville Metro expansion site, which we will be generally aligned to, and also the the CFC for Woolworths, which is also approved diagonally across from our site. We have probably come across the issue of landscaping deep soil, which has been probably one of the issues that we've worked most closely with council on over the last year. As you could see from your site visit, you would have seen that the site currently does not have any landscaping, which is fairly reflective of the industrial area of Marrickville, given its urban context and its density of development. We've worked with council to identify where landscaping would be complementary and most appropriately located to achieve the vision of council, noting that tree canopy coverage is also something that was trying to be achieved. We've identified a portion of the land which is presenting to Murray Street as an appropriate location for deep soil landscaping, noting that the Greening New South Wales policy is aiming for 15%. That is a statewide policy. And so appropriately interpreting it into this context, we feel that 7.5% is appropriate and probably a really good outcome for this site. So in summary, we're quite supportive of the council's recommendation, and we hope the panel are also. We have the National Storage team here. If you've got any questions, Nick and Tim are registered to speak. However, we don't feel that there's any need for them to speak unless the panel specifically would like them to. We also have the architect and engineers available. Myself and Zach from Urbis are also available to field any planning questions you may have. And that's all I need to say.
Thank you, Danielle. Thank you. What I'll do is, Alan has a fairly basic question to ask of the national team. So I think I'll ask Alan to kick us off, asking his question, if you want to start first, Alan. You better unmute yourself. Alan, unmute yourself.
That's better now, you can hear me. I'm concerned about the height proposed and how access will be set up Also, at that height, you'll need fire escape of some sort, I'd imagine. Is there any provision for that? And how will you get to the upper floors?
I can answer that for you, Alan. We've deliberately designed the proposed in a forward gear, which enters on the southern street, which, forgive me, I don't have the plans in front of me, and exits forward in the rear of the building. You quite rightly identified that it is a large vertical structure that does require fire egress, as all of our buildings have multiple joints. Multiple egress points in consultation with our fire engineers. That's fully compliant or alternate solutions provided. So the safety of our facilities are a paramount concern, and we've got the appropriate consultants engaged to design the built form the way that it is to make sure it's safe to all occupants.
If I could also add to that, Alan, at this point, while we do have some detail of the future development on the site, it is a planning proposal. So the level of design detail that goes into this stage probably has some further development that will go through the development application, which will be the detailed proposal to council once fingers crossed, this one gets support.
Thank you, and forgive me, I'm not a town planner.
Thank you, Alan. Can I follow up on just a broad question that we had, a question for the national team? There seems to be behind the whole proposal this view that this one form of storage in the in our new building and an existing storage facility in the old building, and that maintaining the old building in somewhere near its current form and use is important. So they do appear to have two slightly different forms of storage. Can you just explain that to us? And
Okay.
why it's important?
I can, John. There's a number of layers to that. As Danielle alluded to, there's been a fairly lengthy consultation process with multiple levels and interests to get to this point. What we've concluded in our current design is essentially what we're existing going concern. So there's a number of components to that. Whilst we note that there's no actual heritage overlays or protection measures that would prevent us from demolishing the existing structure, we believe that it's in line with the character of the surrounds and that it does well to blend the new built form to the old and give some context to the site. What we currently have is an underutilized sliver of land, which is difficult to transition or utilize in any way, shape, or form other than the existing land use. So we've tried to integrate the new component, which is driven by the market demand of the catchment, with the old to soften the built form. And make sure that it's contextually appropriate to the catchment in the neighborhood.
Can I will ask a follow-up question on that? So the existing building on the west, not the smaller portion on the east, the building on the west, it goes to the boundaries and it's solid. It's a solid brick building, which I presume you've had engineers assess it as being suitable for retaining over the long term. And as far as I know, it was built in the 1950s or thereabouts. Can you tell me what the roof might be made of? Because you're going to be removing part of the roof at the, or the, one of the suggestions is that, I know it's only the hypothetical, but there is a suggestion that you're going to be removing the western wall and a bit of roof. So what's the
Yeah.
roof made of? Because I can't tell what the roof is.
I'll throw to Matt, who's our structural engineer, in a moment. But just as far as the intent, so the reason there was a partial demolition on that frontage that you're referring to is to accommodate some of the feedback that we were provided with regard to deep planting, landscape, canopy cover, and heat island effect. So it was our original preference to maintain the entire structure and roofline without doing that demolition component. However, the consultation process we've been through We determined it probably balanced all interests better to afford a landscape buffer on that street frontage. As far as the viability or structural integrity of the existing built form goes, I'll throw to Matt, who's also on the line here from ADG.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. The existing roof on that portion of the building is a double truss that's a steel truss system, fairly lightweight, and is supported by a central row of trusses and columns down the middle of the building also. It is essentially braced by, while the roof is braced, it braces out to the perimeter brickwork wall at the moment. The preference has been put forward to create the deep planting space. The actual braced bay works out quite well with that because it's one bay in from the end, which has helped us put forward the solution that's there. So by moving that end wall in one bay, it actually still maintains the existing roof structure with very little modification. There's a couple of items in there that we've identified that might need some strengthening due to some past modifications, but essentially we're trying to not touch that or have the least impact on that existing structure as is required, essentially maintaining the use as it currently is.
And the is the cladding on the roof still the original asbestos?
I don't believe so.
Okay. That's for the best of my recollection, that has been replaced. I can't attest to when precisely, but it would have originally been asbestos, but it is a tin roof, at least for the most part now.
So, any other questions? Brian, did you want to, you got some questions?
Yeah, thanks, John. So these questions go principally, I think, to Danielle, and Sue will have some questions that are somewhat similar. And our questions are to do with the drafting and operation of any amendments to the LEP. So the first question I've got, Danielle, is this, and this is looking at your suggestion in 4.2 on page 21 of your planning report, which the council have put into their report as well. That is, a building on the subject land may exceed the floor space ratio shown on the land by an amount no greater than 2.25 to 1, pardon me, if the building is used for the proposed use, I'd say use of self-storage units. Now, the built form and use are two separate things. So how would you imagine that this would operate into the future if, say, for example, the building is built and is used initially for self-storage units? How do you prevent a change of use?
It's a good question. And I guess the reason that we've gone with the approach that we have is because a change of use would still require consideration of traffic generation. And at this time, the traffic generation was the reason that a more generic FSR control was not proposed. Our original proposal when we first came to council was seeking for an FSR control that was generic, site-specific, but agnostic in terms of land use. Council's traffic engineers raised concern that under the current zoning, a particular use being hardware and building supply or of that nature was a permitted use within the zone. They were concerned that that would result in traffic generation that would not be able to be accommodated within the existing transport
I'll
infrastructure.
stop you there. I've got
So,
all that. I'll stop you there. What
yeah.
prevents the CDC being lodged for change of use?
Well, we'd need to have a look to see whether or not it would meet the CDC requirements, but
Well,
I guess
prima
it
facie.
would by on the face of it would be contrary to the planning control, so it couldn't be permitted.
Well, How do you prevent it? How do you prevent the operation of a state policy by the introduction of a clause in a local plan? Hierarchy of documents says that the SEP.
But I think it still needs to be a permitted use, and by definition under this, it would not meet the requirement of the planning control, because the planning control would embed the use.
My preliminary reading of Part 5A, the Industrial and Business Buildings Code of the Exempt and Complying SEP, relates to specified purposes. Now, I come back to the question, though, how do you link the built form to the use? Would that mean if I change the use, because I'd be allowed to under a CDC, are you suggesting I would therefore have to block off part of the building and leave it vacant and not be used?
Well, would there be any impact? I guess there's probably, you'd still need to be looking at your traffic generation. There would be requirements, which were what were ultimately the reasons that we didn't seek a more broad
Is that what the development standards of the exempt and complying SEP require?
I don't have them in front of me. I'm sorry. I didn't get this question ahead of time. We can investigate and come back, but it's quite a detailed and specific question, which you've clearly investigated, but I haven't at this point.
Well, I've had this for about a fortnight. I haven't had it for a year. The other question I've got is, so proposing to link the uplift in FSR to a specific land use, but not limit the spatial location of the height increase. The height would cover the entire site. So doesn't that lead to a mismatch? Because the 30-metre height applies to the entire site. The uplift in FSR applies to only a particular land use. Forget the concept plans, to a particular land use. But floor space doesn't control height in itself, and height does not control floor space in itself. So what would prevent any person from seeking to make use of the height limit, putting aside the FSR limit?
Do you mean that you could build and just have greater spans and still have the FSR? Well, I guess that's the case in all planning controls. There's always a mismatch between the two.
Oh, no, there's not.
Because you have your height control doesn't mean it's as of right as well. And at the moment, there is no height control on the site at all. There is a FSR control. So technically at the moment, you could go greater than 30 metres under the current controls. We're just requesting additional FSR. And as a consequence of that, council have requested that a height control be imposed on the site to limit the overall scale and volume that could be achieved.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Well, just a follow-up question on that, or a couple of follow-up questions. So it's you're not sort of wedded to the idea that there has to be a height control. You'd be comfortable if there was no height control, because it doesn't really matter.
I don't believe that we are requiring a height control. It does form part of our planning proposal, so yeah. It was agreed with council that we would support one, but we did not in the first instance request one. It was put in to appease council in terms of their concerns about the overall height that could be achieved, and to ensure that it would not be greater than a specific height.
Well, I've got a related question as well, because the original proposal was for a floor space ratio of 3.4, and now it's 3.2. Is there any rationale? You know, the Urbis prepared a report justifying the 3.4 in the original proposal, and now you've dropped it to 3.2.
To accommodate the additional landscaped area, and we did not choose to go higher in terms of form. We thought that the original form that we put forward was appropriate for the context. So when the additional landscaped area was identified and we pulled the building back, that loss of floor space related to the ability to introduce landscaping onto the site. So that was where the FSR pulled back.
John, I've got two extra questions.
Okay.
I think Sue's had her hand up for a while too.
Yeah, let's give Sue a go while you ponder your next question, Brian. Sue?
Thanks, John. So, Danielle, I had a couple of questions. I think a comment you made was about the height, the 30-metre height limit proposed is similar to the proposal for the metro site.
I can clarify. So the height control that we are seeking is commensurate to the height of the expansion of the Marrickville Metro. That's the retail development. That's to
not the rail line.
No, nothing to do with that. We actually don't know what. There's nothing publicly available in terms of what is to go ahead on that Sydney Metro land. So that's not the land that we were referring to. It's the Marrickville Metro expansion on the other side of Murray Street. But then the other one that I mentioned was the Woolworths CFC, which is approved on the corner of Sydney Steel Road and Edinburgh Road.
Okay. So picking up Brian's point, it might have been John, about the fact that we have, well, both John and Brian's point about the height limit, the capacity for someone to say, well, I'm going to build to my height limit and try and get a variation to the floor space ratio to build to my height limit.
I can do that.
Yeah, yeah. But there are no height limits on the industrial sites in this precinct. If the panel was mindful to approve it but without a height limit, do you have any particular planning objections to that as a way forward?
No, I personally do not. I think that might be better addressed to the council, but no, I think from the proponent side, we would not be necessarily objecting to that. I think there are some positives in terms of having that in, but we don't have an objection though.
So and then the other issue is for me is to make sure I understand. So the proposal is that there could be any land use on the site up to a floor space ratio, or within the zoning, of course, up to the 0.95 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
But anything above that would have to be for self-storage units. That's what you're applying for, and that's what you understand the planning proposal would be seeking to achieve.
That's right. And if there's a mechanism that we need to work through, I guess this is the early stages of the planning proposal. I'm sure Parliamentary Council will align
tear that apart.
Land use. But to ensure that Brian's concerns are closed out. But I think in terms that's specifically what we are seeking.
And I know this application or this proposal is before the council on the basis of it utilising some or all of the existing building and potentially a new building with the current landowners. That, of course, is planning proposals are a bit agnostic in terms of the current owners, et cetera, and what future owners might want to achieve for the site as well, which may include demolition of a larger part of the existing buildings or complete demolition of the other buildings. So you're mindful of that, but the way in which we will look at this is not necessarily just as the current owners, what their desires are for the site. It'll be what will run with the land, irrespective of who the owner is.
That's exactly right. So, look, we've worked with the proponent on this. They have no intention of selling this site. I know that's not a consideration of the panel, but they have no intention. We did talk about the risk that if we pursue a site-specific and land use-specific proposal and they were to choose to not proceed and sell the site, that it would be unlikely to be of significant benefit to many others, potentially their competitors, but it wouldn't be more broadly supported for other industrial uses because of their commitment to this site and because they are seeking to undertake this development themselves. And they do wish to hold the site in the long term, that they had no issues with that, which is why we've gone ahead with the land use specific uplift.
So And one more point, because Brian was asking you the question about the impact of exempt and complying, because once the building is built, then also exempt and complying it provides in terms of how it can be used. If the panel is mindful to proceed, it might be on the basis that further legal advice is obtained in terms of how to restrict it, the use of the additional floor space, or the almost like bonus floor space was only to be used for self-storage. Is
Yeah,
that
I don't
something
think
you
we
could
have
provide a
evidence.
submit? Yeah, and that in this is and it, would you make a submission on that point? We'd be able to make a further written provide further written advice on that point.
I will defer to National Storage if they're supportive of that. I don't have any issues, Nick.
Yep. Okay.
We're not concerned with being constrained for any other land use or anything other than what we're submitting, just to give you some comfort. In that regard, we are a publicly listed A-REIT. So whilst it may appear as though our business is storage and a large portion of our operating revenue does come from storage, we are actually a property trust. And our business is to purchase, develop, hold, and retain real estate assets in Australia and New Zealand. So we have no intention of doing anything other than what we have proposed to everybody in this room. So therefore, any restriction to that effect, it doesn't concern me in the slightest.
One of our challenges might be how do we frame that so it's
Yeah.
lawful. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, John.
Ryan,
That conversation's answered my questions.
okay.
Thank you.
Alan, do you have any more questions? We can't hear you, Brian, Alan.
Just a suggestion in the landscape scene. There is some landscape work to be done between in Edinburgh Road, I think it is, in the metro stabling area. And I think it would be worthwhile relating to that and seeing if you can maybe not match, but at least be sympathetic to.
Okay.
Yep.
So we all done? I've certainly run out of questions. You've answered all mine. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Danielle and Nick, for providing us with the information. I'll now close the public part of our meeting. As I said, we will now go into a closed session. We will prepare a report. And it will explore some of the issues that we've discussed with the proponent. And then that report will be submitted to the council through the council officer's report, but it will also be available on the council's website later this week. Thank you very much, everyone, for attending.
Thank
Thank
you,
you, Rich.
panel. Thanks very
Thank you.
much.